Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This program is titled, You Know How to Market, Do You Know How to Close the Sale? Tom, how many times have you heard that little phrase, don't overlook the obvious? Well, this month's topic is one of those often overlooked areas that we simply assume business owners understand, but many times they don't.
You're right, Bill. Most business owners understand their products and/or services, so they know how to market to their customers. However, when it comes to closing the sale, many are not very skilled. Debbie made a comment that I'll witness to. She simply said to ask for the sale. That's right, just ask for the sale. Seems obvious. But I can remember many years ago, when I was a general manager of a business, salespeople would come to my office and make great presentations. And in many cases, I actually was ready to buy their product or service, but they simply never asked for the sale, or they never called back. That's just one of the many practical tips Debbie mentions in her presentation.
Well, Tom, the one that I liked was her comment about losing the sale before the business owner ever meets the customer. She calls it three strikes and you're out. The first strike was not calling back. The second strike was changing the previously scheduled time to meet. And the last strike was not showing up on time. Those three strikes can lose the sale before you ever even get to talk to the customer. Well, Tom, we've both known Debbie for a lot of years now. She's very professional, she's easy to understand, and she's very practical as she presents. Our presenter, Debbie Sardone, is both a local business owner and a global business consultant. Debbie has launched five successful businesses, including the national nonprofit Cleaning for a Reason. Debbie helps cash-strapped people start and grow their business, overcome common obstacles, and create legendary service, all while enjoying their entrepreneurial journey. Her expert advice is specific and relevant no matter what stage of business you're in. Do yourself a favor, grab a paper and pencil, get comfortable, and be prepared to take some notes on how to close the sale. And now, with You Know How to Market, Do You Know How to Close the Sale? Here's Debbie Sardone with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
Hi, this is Debbie Sardone with SpeedCleaning.com for Prophet University. You know how to market, but do you know how to close? Getting into an account isn't necessarily the hard part. Sometimes you blow it on the close. Your inability to close is actually just a symptom. What it really means is that your prospect does not think it's worth making a change right now, or that you can actually solve their problem. People will pay nearly anything to solve their problems. Closing starts by identifying the problem your prospect has and how you solve that problem. Otherwise, you're not necessary or you're not cheap enough. Here are just a few things that you can do to get better at closing the sale. This list is in no particular order or no level of priority. It's just some practical things to help you close. First of all, know your impact. Make sure you're clearly able to articulate to the prospect the value that you bring. You have to know the impact that you will have on this other business or person before you'll ever close the deal. I'll give you an example of one time when I actually did a really good job closing, and I'm certainly not perfect, and there have been many times I've blown it, but I was bidding on cleaning for a daycare. I actually own a residential cleaning service, so it doesn't really fit for us to bid on big buildings and do proposals for really large commercial establishments. But sometimes a small daycare or a insurance office or a small dentist office is a good fit for our business. And in this particular case, it was kind of an easy daycare. It was a drop-off daycare. And I was doing the bid, and I knew I was more expensive than the other bids she had already received. But I started connecting with the owner by saying, I understand what's really important here. And what's important here is that when your mothers, when the moms and the parents come to pick up the children, that those customers of yours feel like they are in a sanitary environment. It's not good enough that you have a professional cleaning service cleaning or that you mention that to your customers. It's important that the parents, the actual customers, feel and smell the clean when they walk in your daycare. And of course, the owner said, oh my goodness, you get me. You get it. You understand what I need. I need my parents to approve of this environment. It's not that I need to know everything was cleaned, even though I do need to know that. I need the parents to know it. And we kind of discussed a strategy of how to inform the parents through some brochures that I would provide, some branded brochures that I would provide regarding how my service sanitizes the environment and the toys on a regular and a periodic basis. And I helped her by providing some materials to put in the hands of the parents of the daycare. And so I understood the impact that my business could have on her business, and I was able to articulate that correctly to this prospect. Needless to say, I got the job, even though oftentimes I would lose the bid because I wasn't the cheapest quote. And then make sure you slow down when you're giving a presentation, when you're trying to articulate the impact that your business will have on their business or on them. Slow down. I can't tell you how many times I have felt like I was run over by the salesperson who was giving too much information too fast, not letting me ask questions, moving on to the next point before I could explore it and get my questions answered. And that's frustrating when you want to buy something, but the salesperson isn't interested in slowing down to help you understand how it will solve your problem. So sometimes just slow down. I know I have a tendency to talk fast. If you have that same tendency, you will come across as just selling, hurrying, and rushing the prospect. Slow down. And then be a storyteller. People connect with stories. Whether your unique selling position is centered around your charitable contributions, how you're making an impact in your community, or if your story involves you as the owner and why you started this business and the problem you were trying to solve and nobody else could solve it, therefore you started the business to solve it. Be a storyteller and give real live examples. Maybe provide examples of how another prospect was in a particular situation, especially one that this particular candidate is sharing with you, and how you solve that problem specifically with that business. You can name other business or other businesses, or if it needs to be confidential, you can reference them in a confidential way. But people connect with stories and real life examples. Stop trying to close. Instead, focus on helping the prospect. Focus on the customer's problem and how you solve it. And I know we just discussed that, but sometimes we get to closing too soon when we really haven't focused on how you're going to solve that problem. It may not be time to ask for the sale, ask for the date, or ask for the contract if you haven't had a chance to demonstrate the problem that you solve. Maybe you haven't asked enough questions to find out what problem they're having that you can solve. Oftentimes, business owners or the person doing the sales dreads the close because it's kind of terrifying to have to ask for somebody's business or to ask for the sale. A lady that I'm working with locally recently articulated her frustration on how much she hates the sales part of her business. And she's a sole proprietor. No sales happen without her. She's it. And I said, Diana, the problem is you're selling. Quit selling and you won't dread selling. You need to focus all your time and energy in solving their problem, getting to know the customer, building a relationship, finding out what problem they have that you know you can solve. Because you know with confidence you can solve certain problems with certain people. Others you can't. If you can't solve their problem, then that really isn't a sale that you're ever going to make. And I asked her, next time you're dreading going out and, as she would call it, cold calling and selling, just focus on solving other people's problems. Give yourself permission not to make a single sell, but to meet with people and discuss the problems that they're having. She happened to have a weight loss and fitness business, and connect with people who have that struggle and simply give advice, give direction, give them personal stories of how you overcame your weight loss challenges, and forget trying to sell. Forget trying to close. So stop trying to close. And if you solve enough problems and you connect with people in a way that they believe you have the solution to their problem, that deal will close itself. So of course, just like there's rules to selling, of course, there are rules to closing, some more practical rules. First of all, don't forget this. Make sure you provide a written proposal. In most cases, especially service businesses, there needs to be a written proposal. There have been so many times I've tried to hire contractors to do business with me, and they come out and they give a verbal bid. It's hard to take someone seriously when they don't create a written proposal. It's hard to make a decision when you don't have anything in writing telling you what you just bought or what you are buying. A written proposal is absolutely necessary if you want to be taken seriously. Forget the verbal. And then, of course, depending on the type of proposal that you do or the type of selling that you do, try to be seated during your presentation, whether it's long or short. Try to be seated. It may be that you walk the property and you take measurements and specs and make notes and so forth for your estimate, but then sit down to close the deal. Even in the house cleaning industry where, you know, it's not big buildings that we're bidding on and gigantic multi-million dollar accounts. These are small accounts in the residential cleaning industry. But after we do an in-home walkthrough of the client's home, making notes on her preferences and the nuances of the house, we invite the homeowner to sit down with us either at a kitchen table or in the living room so that we can write up a written proposal or a written estimate, and we're seated. It's much easier to guide the conversation the way you need to guide it if you're seated versus if you're standing and the person is always trying to inch you to the door and get you out the door. So it's just a kind of a communication skill dynamics. It certainly doesn't fit every style of sales and closing sales, but in most cases, making sure you sit down is a part of the psychology of the close. And then make sure you're communicating clearly. No one will trust a person who cannot communicate clearly and confidently what they're selling. Make sure you are clear. I've been very frustrated when I've wanted to purchase something. I have sought out a vendor to give me a bid or to give me information, and they couldn't clearly articulate what they would actually do for me. It's very frustrating for the prospect, and it will be a reason you won't close, is you're creating confusion. And now, don't be intimidated by the opportunity to sell and hopefully close if someone approaches you and they're not exactly clear on how your program works. And don't feel compelled to clear it all up before you actually have a meeting to sit down and discuss your options. I'll give you a funny example. Recently, I was working with a business owner, and she said one of the frustrating things about her service, and she has a welcome service, so it's a marketing service. Of course she charges for her service, but she welcomes new homeowners to the neighborhood with a packet of freebie giveaways from local business owners, coupons, brochures, flyers, and little free samples of things in the community. And so her service is a welcome service, a greeting and welcome service to new move-ins, presenting local business owners. So it's marketing, and of course it's paid. And her frustration is, she said, I can't tell you how much I dread when people at networking meetings come up to me and say, oh, I'd love to put my samples in your greeting service. And could we meet and talk about that? And of course, she said, I dread that because I know they assume it's free, that I'm just going to take their samples and I'm going to be grateful to have their little giveaways and I'm going to stick it in my my program. And she said, I just hate that approach that somebody comes to me and says, oh, I've got some really great samples I'll give you to put in your program. And I said, quit worrying about the fact that they're not clear on what you offer and how you offer it. It's an opportunity for a meeting. It's certainly not misleading if they tell you, let's get together and talk. It's not misleading for you to accept that opportunity. And instead, she was kind of blowing the opportunity to close the deal before she even met with them by scaring them away. It's their assumption that it's free, or it's her assumption that they assume it's free. I think most of us know in business, if it's of value, it isn't free. And I said, turn that into an opportunity. They might assume you'll put their item in their packet for free. And in a sense, you do. Yeah, there's no extra charge to include your goodies, but the overall marketing package is X per month. And we've got three levels. And let me share those three levels with you. And by the way, while I'm sharing those three levels, let me help you see the benefits of being in my greeting and welcome service. So I said, don't be afraid that somehow they haven't understood how your program works and missing the opportunity to sell and close the deal. So sometimes the communication is incorrect on the other party's part, but if you do a good job clearing it up, you can close the deal. And then assume they're buying. Don't assume that you need to talk them into anything. Go in with confidence. Go in ready to sign them up or to close the deal. Don't assume they're a no or a maybe. And then make them beg you for the sale. I have had that happen. I have literally had people that I've tried to hire for a service assume that I was going to get other bids. I've had people assume that I was just checking around. And they never asked me for my business. They literally left without my saying yes because they never asked. And I was ready to go ahead and sign up. So assume they're buying until they convince you otherwise. And then, of course, stay confident, even if they turn you down. No is never permanent. But how you treat when they turn you down the matter, how you treat the whole matter when you're turned down, can make or break whether this is a permanent no or a temporary no. So stay confident, stay positive. Just because they turn you down now does not mean that they will necessarily turn you down later. And then, of course, be positive. Don't blow it for later. This happens all the time. I have had people act annoyed with me because I wasn't ready to sign up when I was serious. I have had people treat me like I'm just a bargain hunter or a tire kicker because I want to get other bids or because I'm not ready to make a decision. The most professional businesses leave on a positive note even if the sale wasn't made. Don't blow it. Don't treat everything like it's do or die today. That's what desperate business owners do. I think about those timeshare programs, and they are really all about make the sale under pressure and duress today, or the sale is lost forever. And that is the way that business model works. I could never sell in that environment because it's unethical. The way their strategy is if you tell them emphatically no, they will insult you. They will be rude to you. I was at a timeshare presentation one time, and this has been years ago, and it really and truly was an opportunity for them to sell me. I could afford their timeshare. Yeah, I showed up there because of the free restaurant certificates and whatever else freebie the guy on the street was offering if you showed up and listened. I was there for that, but I also was in an income bracket where if they had something I really wanted, I could have afforded to buy it. It was up to them to convince me that their timeshare was worth my money and worth my time. But what did they do? In that industry, they burn bridges. They pressure you to say yes right on the spot, and they insult you to pieces if you don't. In fact, when I told her that she had not convinced me in any way why on earth I would pay that amount of money for their timeshare, but that I was open if they had other options, she insulted me. And she said, you know what, I sized you up from the minute you sat down and I just knew you people were renters. Luckily, I've been around the block when it comes to selling and closing for a few years before that conversation, and I looked her straight in the eye and I said, you know, insulting me is never going to make me want to buy from you. And I said, that's a really funny strategy that you're using, but it doesn't work on educated people. And so I kind of zinged her back, but probably 20 years earlier, I would have been all rattled and felt like I needed to convince her that we are people of means and we can afford that timeshare and that I'm not a renter, but it didn't rattle me one little bit. She definitely didn't close on a positive. Now, obviously, local business owners can't burn bridges. You never know when that maybe or that no is going to come back later or is going to refer you even if they don't use you. So stay positive. Don't burn bridges. Don't be a smart aleck. And this is really kind of funny. It seems like I shouldn't even have to mention it, but I have to bring this up because you never know who forgets to ask for the sale. I was working with my son a few years ago on his business. He actually called me up. He knows I do business consulting. I've been in business for over 30 years. And he'd asked me for help, and I've helped him kind of incrementally here, and I'd give him advice over the phone. And one day he was frustrated with his business. He's in he's a contractor, a general contractor, and he does remodeling. And he had a frustrated voice on the other end of the line. I mean, he's a grown man. He's not a kid. And he said, Mom, you help everybody else all around the world. Will you please come help me? I will pay you whatever you want. And I basically said, Stephen, I'm not going to charge you. I cannot charge my son for consulting, but here's what I'll do. I'll carve out an entire week, a 40-hour block of time where I don't do anything else, and I will come every single day, and I will shadow you in your business, and we will find out where the weaknesses are and how I can help you. And what I learned during that week, which was an assumption that I had been making all along, is my son didn't know how to close a sale. He was not asking for people's business. Now, we worked on some other things, some operational issues and some processes that were missing and not in place. But the number one thing that he was struggling with, which he didn't know, and I just made a big assumption that he knew, was he wasn't leaving without asking for the sale. And after I went on a couple of jobs with him, or bids with him, I said, why didn't you ask for the sale? They looked like they were ready to sign up. And he said, oh, I don't know. I was going to give them the bid later and check back with them and see if they wanted. I said, no, you had two clients that were very serious, that were frustrated with their situation. You had already demonstrated during the sales process that you were capable and available to solve their problem. And the only thing that was missing is you didn't say, hey, we happen to have an opening next Wednesday. We could actually get started on your project by then. Would you like for me to at least hold that date for you? He never asked for the sale. And so we kind of uncovered during that week that, and he shared with me, he never asked for the sale. He always leaves saying, well, I will get back with you. And so I thought that was kind of funny. And we both learned something that day, that oftentimes in sales, that the part of not closing is because you never asked for the sale. And I have seen salesmen do that to me. They never ask for the sale. I've literally had to say to someone who was getting me a bid for something, I'm ready to sign up. Oh, you want to sign up? Yes, I want to sign up. It's really kind of funny. So make sure you have a point in your presentation, if it's appropriate, of course. Different presentations call for different levels of close, but make sure you're asking for the sale. And then make sure you don't leave without some kind of a yes, even if the answer was not yes to your sale. If you ask for a very specific yes to a very specific date and time, and the answer is no, it could be I'm getting other bids, it could be I'm just now at the beginning stages of this project, it could be I need to get funding, I need to talk to my boss, you know, who knows all the different reasons why you can't leave with a yes, but you need to leave with some kind of a yes. Otherwise, you make it harder for you to close eventually. So what do I mean, some kind of a yes? You can ask for an appointment for the follow-up. You can suggest a follow-up day or call. You can simply say something like, let's say they tell you, I have to think it over with my spouse, or I have to run these proposals by my boss, or I'm getting three other bids. Make an appointment to follow up. Especially if they say, well, we're getting more bids this week and we're not going to make a decision until next week, then simply say something like, would it be all right if I follow up with you then on Tuesday of next week? And they might say, no, I'm actually not meeting with my team to make a decision until Tuesday afternoon. No problem. Would it be all right if I call you Wednesday morning or if I stop by Wednesday morning? In other words, make an appointment if you don't get a yes so that you can get a yes for that. And try to nail them specifically on a date and time by suggesting it. Don't ask them. Don't make people work for you. So don't ask them to come up with a date or a time, or they'll say something like, oh, don't worry about it, I'll call you. You don't want that. You want to be able to follow up with them. So make it easy for them by suggesting, would it be all right if I follow up with you by Wednesday afternoon or by Friday morning or whatever seems appropriate? But get some kind of a yes. Or if you do follow up, whether you stop by or you make a phone call, depending on what is the best fit for your business, and the answer is no, we've chosen another provider, or we've chosen somebody a little bit cheaper or whatever, then simply say, well, if it's all right with you, may I check back with you in the future? And get a yes, because most people, they feel bad that they turned you down for business. They're going to say, yeah, feel free to check back with me. Most of us do that just to get a salesman off our back. And most of us know that salesmen aren't disciplined enough to ever check back, but you're not going to be that way. And so when you say, may I check back with you in a few months or a few weeks or whatever, put that on your calendar and check back with them. And then stop selling people what you want to sell and sell what they want to buy. This is really difficult, especially for sole proprietors. We have it in our heads as to what people need and what they need to buy from us and what we do best. And oftentimes, we can't scale that back. We can't create option B and C because we're so focused on what they need to buy from us. And we could close more deals if we would create other options to enable people to say yes to us. Give me another option. Don't make me buy the whole kit and caboodle. Don't make me buy package A plus super deluxe. In other words, let your customers set their standards. Let your customers set your standards, I guess is a better way to say it. Let your customers set your standards. Offer other options to allow them to say yes. I'll give you an example in the house cleaning business. Back in the early days of my business, I tried to force a full-blown spring cleaning on all first-time cleans for brand new clients. Why? Because I knew what the need was. I knew what the problem was. Everybody that called had a filthy house. People don't call you when their house is clean and they just want to maintain it. That's not how business works. People call when they have a problem and they want it solved. And so I knew this as a business owner, even if they didn't know it. People would call up, they would say, well, my house isn't that bad, but I would insist on everybody starting with a deep cleaning, a big spring cleaning. It was kind of expensive, and I would lose that opportunity over the phone because I didn't have other options, and I knew they had a dirty house. Instead, as I matured in business, I realized, you know what? I lose a lot of sales unnecessarily, and what I'm really after is their repeat business anyway. And so I started offering options over the phone. I would simply say, we have three levels of service. We have kind of a budget cleaning, a budget service, and that's where we come in for like a minimum of 4 hours. And we work by the hour, and we'll work in order of your priorities. And when we run out of time, we'll be finished. And that'll help you stick with a budget. Then we have kind of a mid-level service where we do the whole house, but we don't do a full-blown spring cleaning. We generally add about 2 to 3 extra hours to a budget cleaning, and we focus our time and energy on the main primary areas that need the most attention, and then we spend a little extra time on some of the other areas that might need some attention. But it's not our full-blown top-to-bottom deluxe clean. But then option 3 is a deluxe clean. And that's where we go in and we wash everything we can reach from top to bottom. We hand wash the baseboards and the doors and the light fixtures and the ceiling fans by hand. And we take the time to vacuum the blinds and we scrub the buildup out of the shower stalls. And I would go into great levels of detail describing what was included in the deluxe cleaning. I would let the customer set my standards for what they would buy. And I would let the customer say, you know what? That's exactly what I need. We're moving. We're going to try to sell our house. And we need that full-blown top-to-bottom deluxe. So we'll buy that one, the level 3 level of service. Or the person who was more on a budget that says, you know, I don't really need that. I'm not that particular. I just need to get my house cleaned. I have company coming. And let her buy that middle level. Or the person who's on a budget that says, I'll be happy with whatever you can do in 4 hours. That's my budget. In other words, sure, I want to come in and clean everything right and clean everything from top to bottom and get the house at square one so that I can maintain it. But that's not always what customers are buying. And I had to learn to offer options so that they could buy what they wanted. And then I was much more likely to win their repeat business. And so we've got to quit just selling people what we want to sell them and let our clients set our standards and sell them that. Now, in some cases, that's not appropriate. In some cases, there are levels that you can offer that are a good fit for both you and the customer or the prospect. And then, of course, make sure you create scarcity in order to encourage a decision. And I mean legitimate scarcity. There's nothing more obnoxious than a business that's creating phony scarcity and everybody knows it. Well, if you buy today, it's $3,000 off, and if you wait till tomorrow, it isn't. I don't like phony scarcity, and people really do get tired of those tired old sales tactics. But if you want to close today and you know you have the opportunity, find a way to create legitimate scarcity. For example, we are only running this special through the end of March because April starts our very, very busy season. We do have a lot of unsold spots, a lot of unsold days, and that just goes away organically come April 1st when everybody's calling us to install landscaping or to install, you know, main fix their air conditioners or whatever it is that you do. Create legitimate scarcity. And I personally will avoid scarcity that requires somebody to make an instant decision on the spot if it's an expensive purchase. Now, if it's a low-cost purchase, then you can create scarcity that says, I only make this available while I'm here if you sign up. And if I leave because of the cost involved of coming back, then I don't make this discount available. Make sure it's sincere and not gimmicky, but create scarcity because that helps people who really are in a position to make a decision on the spot. It helps just push them over the edge and go, oh yeah, go ahead. Yeah, let's sign you up. So create some legitimate scarcity to get that close right then and there. And then offer dates and details for assumed yeses with, of course, a backup option. For example, I thought this was a brilliant way to close. I invited a carpet company to come out and give me a bid, measure an area that I was having recarpeted in my home, and give me a bid. And I told them up front I was going to get two other bids and that I was really just checking. And they said, no, we'll just come out free of charge, measure, give you the bid. While he was here, even though I was fully intending on getting other bids, he said, well, because of our schedule and because of the deal that we offer, and we do offer a special deal when we sign you up at the time of the estimate, because we're going to be leaving you samples, and if I have to come back and pick up the samples, then it is an extra expense to us. So the discount does go away after I leave. So if you'll go ahead and sign up for the carpet and schedule it today, you can change your mind over the next 72 hours and just call me and I will tear up this agreement. And the discount was substantial. And I felt like I was leaning towards their company anyway, but I had committed to myself to get other bids. And I told him that. And he said, we appreciate that. We know you're still going to choose us even when you do get other bids. We're confident of that. But this discount goes away because we're going to have to come back and pick up samples. And so he said, why don't you just sign up now, go ahead and give us our deposit. I will not cash your check. I will tear it up, and I will tear up this agreement at a certain date if you change your mind. It was too good to pass up. That was an irresistible offer. He made it easy for me. He said, you're not going to have to take more time to meet with me, to sign this agreement and get partial payment and have me come back out and lose your discounts if we go ahead and do this today. And that was the deal for me. I mean, it closed the deal. I said, sure, no problem. I wrote him a check for partial payment. I allowed him to take his samples back, and he signed the contract with me. Well, lo and behold, I'm a busy woman. I really didn't have time to get other businesses, and especially since they weren't as good as they were about returning my calls and scheduling the bids, and I wanted my carpet when I wanted it. And so he made it so easy for me to do business with him and so irresistible for him to leave my house with a close that I actually ended up calling him 24 hours later and said, oh, just go ahead and keep the appointment. I'm not getting other bids. So create an irresistible offer to close, obviously, if it's a good fit and it's ethical, and just leave with a yes as best you can. And then stop losing the close before you walk in the door. And this happens so often with small business owners that are running ragged, trying to keep up in business, have a little bit of chaos going on in the background with scheduling and operations and staff management, that you literally lost the sale before you ever walked in the door. And oftentimes that's why you didn't close. I know in my business we have a three strikes you're out policy, and I teach my salespeople this, that customers have in their head basically three strikes you're out, even if you don't know that you're out. They might be too polite or too timid to say, you know what, you lost the job before you ever got here. But three strikes you're out. If they call our office for a quote and we take too long to get back with them and they have to call back and ask for that quote, that's really strike one, even though they didn't tell us they were mad. They might be very polite and kind, but that's strike one. We left a bad impression. They called yesterday. We never called them back. Now they called again today. We might think everything is fine, but in their mind, strike one, let's see how they do. Then we set up an estimate. What if we call them, you know, 5 or 6 hours before the estimate? We think that was enough notice, but we don't know that she spent maybe an hour picking up her house so that when she has the estimate with us at 5 after work, she's not humiliated by the mess. And so we call her midday and say, you know, I hate to do this to you. Is there any way we can move your estimate to tomorrow instead of tonight at 5? And we have no idea, but we just caused strike two. She might be polite and comply and say, well, no problem. That's okay. Tomorrow's fine. But no telling what she rearranged in her day and her schedule to meet us at the time we initially set. So for us, that's strike two, and we don't even know it. And then strike three, you show up 10 minutes late for the estimate. In other words, don't lose the close before you ever walk through the door, before you ever sit down at the meeting or present your proposal. You can lose that close by the way the telephone call was handled, by the timeliness or the punctuality of the salesperson or the technician. You can lose that close by appearing disheveled and disorganized and not handling the process correctly. You lost it from the beginning. So make sure you know that closing the sale starts long before you're ever actually presenting the sale. And then, of course, check back until they tell you to stop. If you do leave without a yes, make sure you make that appointment to follow up and then check back regularly until they say, go away and leave me alone. Don't give up. Drop by. I mean, depending on the type of an account and the value of that account, you can drop by regularly, drop off gifts, drop off information. You can put them into your email drip marketing campaign to remind them on a regular basis. They should have gone with you. They should have hired your service. And of course, tempt them with offers periodically through your drip marketing campaigns, whether it's postcards, letters, emails, whatever. Don't give up until they tell you to leave them alone. Now go out and close that sale.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.